Hello, and welcome to From the Rookery. This is going to be one of our retrospective podcasts. Well, it's the anniversary today of that Deeney goal. And it's always that Deeney goal. We've seen it a billion times. And for many of us, we were there. It's not that long ago, but it feels historic. And today in this podcast, we're going to speak to many, many Watford fans about what it was like for them on the day, depending on where they were and who they were with. To them, I can just say thank you very much. Firstly, Kelly Sommers, Matt Rowson, Adam Drury, Steve Van Dyke, Ollie Wicken, Jacob Colshaw, Stuart Hutchinson. You'll also hear from Troy Deeney himself, but also hear from the FTRE gang. Jason from DCW and, of course, from Mike. So let's go back a little bit. And before we actually get into the craziness of that Troy Deeney goal, I think it's important, as Matt Rowson points out here, to remember the season was more than just this goal.
Fabulous as Troy's goal is, it overshadows so much else that was great on the day and in the season. The fact that we didn't go up, the fact that we would lose against Crystal Palace in the final, overshadows what was a remarkable achievement, really, and particularly in the light of seasons like this one. You know, we know how chucking a load of players together, however good they are, isn't a guarantee of success. And we'd done that. We chucked a load of players, you know, at high speed. You know, the takeover, by all accounts, in the summer of 2012 had taken longer than expected, so that players came in on loan, one after the other, and far too late for Zola to melt into a team at the start of the season. So it wasn't until Troy returned to the team that we really started to cook on gas. And the run from then was tremendous. We were absolutely fabulous. And the real shame is that we didn't get promoted automatically by beating Leeds, which we should have done on the final day of the season. But we were good enough, and our performance that season justified it. And that's sort of got lost and forgotten, given what happened afterwards. You know, Zola's flame died rather quickly the next season, and perhaps promotion would have been a disaster. But it was tremendous to get where we got to as quickly as we got to, and as spectacularly as we got to, however good the players were.
But I've already said this is a historic moment in Watford history. And of course, Watford historian, writer of Hornet Heaven, Ollie Wicken, feels its place in Watford's history.
It all comes down to the fact that we went from apparently inevitable defeat to victory in just 20 seconds. I mean, I've seen Watford in amazing turnarounds before over the years. I was there when we were 4-0 down to Southampton in 1980 and won 7-5 on aggregate. That was astonishing. But it took 120 minutes. I was there when we were 0-3 down to Bolton in 1993 and won 4-3. That was brilliant and shorter, but it was still 20 minutes. I was there at the FA Cup semi-final against Wolves, coming back from 0-2 down, but saving the game took 15 minutes and winning it took extra time. But against Leicester, the turnaround was 20 seconds, just 20 seconds. Many of us probably didn't even take a breath between Almunia saving the penalty and Deeney scoring the goal. 20 seconds from soup to nuts.
Apart from the latter few, many of those moments that Ollie spoke about there were never really visible on television, and not many Watford fans, apart from those that were there, were able to remember and to feel that moment. Adam Drury, one of our contributors, Adam, did you make it to the game?
My main memory of that famous afternoon at Vicarage Road was, unfortunately, that I wasn't actually there. I've been at basically every major Watford occasion over the last 15, 20 years, but I missed this one. It was actually my first year at uni, and I'd spent far too long travelling up and down the country from Sheffield, watching Watford's automatic promotion bid that season, watching the Zola coaster unfold. And it basically got to the Fell semi-finals, and I think I let slip to my parents that, you know, money was becoming a bit of an issue here. And my dad said to me, listen, if you don't pay to come down to the semi-final, if you save your money, watch it up in Sheffield, then I will reimburse you for your train ticket and match ticket for the final. The logic being that if we lose the semi-final, well, at least you didn't miss out on too much. If we win the semi-final and make it to Wembley, well, who's going to care about what happens in that semi-final? Everything that was worth remembering happened at Vicarage Road this day rather than at Wembley a couple of weeks later. So thanks for that, Dad.
So how were you feeling before the game? Were you full of joy, full of anticipation? Or were you full of dread? Let's hear Jacob from WD18 felt before the game.
I have to admit, beforehand, I wasn't feeling too optimistic. Obviously, we'd gone away to the King Power, lost 1-0, but the hangover of the final day against Leeds was still in the back of my mind. You know, the fact that we could have gone up automatically, Leeds had come to spoil the party. It couldn't really have panned out any worse than we could have imagined. And we've gone away to the King Power. We've lost 1-0 with courtesy to a David Nugent goal. And you're thinking, here we go again, Watford. So I came into the game at the Vic, not really expecting a lot.
And Watford fan Kelly Summers, you know, that one off the telly. At this point, Kelly was working at Bournemouth in their media team on the first rung of her way up the media ladder. Now, Kelly, were you feeling the same as young Jacob?
Before the game now feels like a blur because all I can remember is the pain of that penalty being given and everything that came after. I do remember that familiar feeling of when you go into the playoffs and the not knowing and thinking, wow, if we've come all of this way to have our season hanging on one game. And Leicester were a good side. I remember Harry Kane being on the bench that day, Knockhart, skillful players, a real together group.
And Steve Van Dijk, another Watford fan. Steve, how are you feeling before kickoff?
I remember going into the game feeling a little bit negative about our chances. I felt like Leicester were comfortable in the first leg. To some extent, felt like we weren't in the best of form. Our chance had really gone, I felt, against Leeds at home. Heartbreaking match that was. Vidra was off form. I just didn't have the best feeling going into the match.
OK, so you guys are feeling a little bit of dread in the game. Let's find some positives. Matt Rowson, what about you? Where was your head at?
We'd been on a tremendous run throughout the season. I wasn't sure that we'd win, but I was optimistic, certainly, going into the game and looking forward to it.
I guess that is a bit more positive, Matt. Adam Drury, what about you?
Watford's form was decent coming into this game. The dip that had seen us fall away from those automatic promotion positions had come maybe a month or so earlier, back end of March and April. And actually, we got a couple of wins at the end of April that got us back into that fight for second, including that night at Leicester when Shalaba scored that 30-yard rocket. And it felt like actually Watford were getting back into the rhythm they'd been in earlier in the season around this time. Even that last day against Leeds, everything that could have gone against us went against us that day. I don't remember a feeling that that was really going to hit us too hard in terms of our form. It almost gave us a resolve to put it right in the playoffs.
Before the second leg against Leicester, I was confident. And the more so, you know, once we started to play and we overcame Leicester. We were better than Leicester that season. We beat them, but were the better team in every game. They were not a fit opponent. They were not a worthy opponent of that team, really. You know, over the course of the game, we all remember seeing Vardy and Harry Kane watching from the bench on the footage behind Nigel Pearson, but they weren't the players that they would become, and they weren't cornerstones of that team, which was a much more modest team than the team that would go up as champions a year later.
Dare I ask, Michael, dare I ask how you felt, Mr. Michael Parkin, before this game?
I actually remember on the day of the game being really, really calm, which is totally and utterly unlike me. Usually, for a game of that magnitude, I'm absolutely hopping around like a cat on a hot tin roof. But I remember that day, I remember it being quite a nice day weather-wise, just being quite at ease, at peace with what was about to happen. I think that was largely down to a text I got from my dad. Me and my brother went to the first leg at the King Power where Leicester won 1-0. Matty Vidra should have scored, he was 1-on-1. And I remember I got a text from my dad after that game saying, "Mike, the best team lost, keep the faith." And that was it. And I thought, that, Dad, you get it. And when you get a message from your dad, it's sort of, Dad knows best still, even at my age, Dad knows best. So I just felt at ease, calm, going into the game that Watford would overcome. They were the better team in that first leg, and I thought they'd overcome Leicester to win the second.
So the game starts, and of course it's action, it's an intense game. There are two teams battling out for a place at Wembley, battling out for a place in the Premier League, and all the great moolah that comes with being in that division. And it didn't take long, well, too long, before Watford got themselves back into the tie.
When the game started, and Matty Vidra absolutely nailed one into the top corner courtesy of an absolutely delicious Marco Cassetti pass, which everyone forgets about. That pass is one of the best passes I've seen at the Vic. Gorgeous on the outside of his boot. It's gorgeous of the man himself, to be fair.
Now Cassetti for Vidra. Oh, goodness me! He's back! Matej Vidra has plucked out an absolute stunner, and Watford are level! And Kasper Schmeichel is absolutely rooted. This is top, top quality. And the tie now is absolutely wide open. And Vidra, well, he needed a goal. This is a really spectacular one.
Started to get a little bit optimistic. And then when we got knocked back again, my optimism obviously is just going to be drained a little bit. And I'm thinking, come on, Watford, not the same again. And I think because that season was so good, so entertaining, and every game you watch, you didn't really know what to expect with Watford in a good way, because some of the matches, we were just scoring goals for fun, but we also, you know, at the back, were a little bit leaky at times. But it was a joy to go to Vicarage Road that season, just in terms of the brand of football we were playing. And when you compare it to the previous season, the style of football was something that I'd really remember. I actually think that season in general was one of my favourites to be a Watford fan, because I didn't really have any expectation going into the season, and I didn't really have any expectation going into that playoff semi-final, so I can remember that game so vividly.
Nugent! He's done it again! A timely leap from David Nugent, and the goals are starting to flow from him, and Leicester back in front!
My general feelings around the match were, I guess, I suppose, even though Leicester equalised at half-time, I felt like we were in it. I remember feeling a bit more positive than I had felt pre-match. And obviously we go on to get that second goal and everything's looking good for us at that point. I think I remember feeling that we were in the ascendancy and if anyone was going to win it, we were.
You know, when we got to 2-1 after that extraordinary pair of goals from Vidra, who hadn't been playing well and was something of a surprise selection, I think, given that he was out of form. You know, his first goal was remarkable. His second goal was pretty good as well. I mean, it was a very decent 1-2 between him and Troy.
Next try. Vidra. Getting the return from Deeney. Vidra! Matej Vidra steps up when Watford really need him. And once again, in this extraordinary semi-final, we are level.
The attacking potential in that team was just incredible, thinking back, comparing even the Watford squad that got promoted a couple of years ago. This one just had so much more firepower from all over the pitch. The midfield options with Abdi, who was one of my favourite ever Watford players, at the tip of the midfield. Vidra had an incredible season, wasn't playing particularly well at this time, and I remember it being a talking point whether he or Forestieri would start this game alongside Troy. Troy had also missed that playoff semi-final first leg and was a little bit fresher, I guess, and determined to put right his red card from the week before. I think most people expected Leicester to get the job done, most neutrals, and it felt like we had a chance. And as the game unfurled, I don't remember changing that opinion too much. I remember even when we were levelling the game, behind on aggregate for most of the match at 1-1 on the day, I remember thinking, obviously being worried, but thinking, I think we're going to create the chance that gets us back into this at some stage. And luckily, Vidra found his shooting boots in a pretty spectacular way that afternoon and got us back into it.
Then something bad happened, but no spoilers. Something great happens in a minute. But we have to go through this bad bit, this annoying bit. Jacob.
I remember first off thinking, Matthew Briggs, what are you doing? Secondly, I thought, Marco Cassetti, please don't get sucked in. Please don't let Anthony Knockhart make a little bit of contact. And at the time, I have to admit, I thought it was soft, but I thought if it was the other way around, I'd probably want it, I'd be all over it. But it was soft, obviously, and we watch it on the replays, and it should never have been given in the first place. You could see, I remember my position in the upper Graham Taylor stand, obviously the upper house at the time. I was towards the Leicester fans, and I just remember a really clear image of the fans starting to bounce up and down, thinking, you know what, this is the goal that's going to take them to Wembley. And I'd kind of resigned myself to us getting knocked out and not getting to the final. I think, as I said, with the hangover of the final day as well, it just kind of felt like this wasn't going to be our season.
Knockout, he's got beyond Briggs, still going. Knockout goes to ground as Cassetti leads on him. Penalty! That is a massive decision. What a huge decision given by Michael Oliver. I'm not convinced he's got it right. Knockout, for me, is looking for it. Well, it's a season-defining call, nothing short of that.
The Leicester move that led to the penalty unfolding was in a very jittery state, late in added time, just thinking that Matthew Briggs just needs to get rid of the ball at this moment. We'll take extra time. We're doing okay in the game. It feels like we've got the best players on the pitch in our team. Let's just get it to the extra 30 minutes and we're going to have a chance. Please don't chuck it away at this moment. And unfortunately, Matthew Briggs, who you have to say was one of our dozier loan signings ever and probably wasn't really good enough to be playing at that level and shouldn't have been on the pitch at that stage, got caught on the ball. And you just kind of saw it unfolding in slow motion as Knockhart broke into the box.
Marco Cassetti, well, does he foul Anthony Knockhart? Of course he doesn't. This is a collision with, well, not even a collision, was it? The coming together, the tackle from Marco Cassetti. And his response was absolutely superb. It was almost dismissive, as if questioning the referee. What on earth are you doing? You know that wasn't a foul. I know that wasn't a foul. What on earth are you doing giving a penalty there? It put me in mind of earlier on in the season where he'd got sent off away at Peterborough, and he just laughed at the ref and sort of wagged his finger and said, "You, what on earth are you doing sending me, Marco Cassetti, off?" That sort of slightly amused indifference. He wasn't obviously finding it funny, but it was a laugh or you'll cry moment, because of course he knew the significance of the situation. We knew the significance of the situation as supporters, and it's just, yeah, the juxtaposition of the delight of Marco Cassetti setting up that wonderful first goal, Cassetti being involved in such detail on that day, I think is quite fitting, because he had a brief but exciting time with Watford Football Club, didn't he?
You're absolutely right, Mike. I mean, no Watford fan at all could even thought for a second that was an actual penalty. Is that right, Adam?
Michael Oliver gets a lot of stick for giving this as a penalty. Live, my instinct was that Cassetti had thrown an arm out and not knock Art over, and I expected him to give the penalty in that moment. I know the replays show that it's a little bit soft, but actually, to this day, I'm a bit of a contrarian about this. I don't think it's such a shocking decision, or the shocking decision that a lot of people will have you believe. I think, like everybody at that point, thought, well, after everything that happened in the Leeds game the week before, it just feels like we're the club that's going to be cursed this year.
Now, good friend of the podcast, Tayo, who is a very well-known Arsenal fan, was at the game with his then-Watford girlfriend and his Watford-supporting friend. And actually, he was there with a Tottenham fan as well, Paddy. Tayo had seen a lot of Watford that season because his girlfriend was a Watford fan. And he got, you know, started taking Watford to his heart. Maybe not as much as Arsenal. But how did he feel after watching the game in that moment, seeing a former Arsenal goalkeeper facing that penalty?
By that point, you're so invested in it. Felt sick. Felt sick like everyone did. I can remember the hush of the rookery end and just the deflation. And it's mad at that time. It doesn't really matter whether it's your team or not, because once you're invested in it as much as I was, then it matters massively, right?
I sat down and I got my phone out and I started texting my wife saying, "They've got a penalty. I'll be home again very soon." But Stu Hutchinson, what did you do when that penalty was given?
My mate Jeremy and I just stood up, barged away to the end of the row. I'm very much of the opinion that not seeing bad stuff is a good thing. If you don't remember it, you're not haunted by it. We fight our way to the end of the row and we're stomping underneath the seats, you know, along the concourse where the bars and the food counters are. Tears in our eyes.
When the penalty was awarded, I am rubbish at watching penalties anyway. Don't know if I've watched or not. I think I turned around not to watch and then decided to watch at the last minute, and just head in hand, standing with my mum. And at that moment, when a penalty is given, you don't ever think that they're going to miss the penalty, because the chances are it's in the player who's taking its favour. They're going to score. Stats show that. So at that moment, all of our whole season played through our head. And I was like, wow, we're not going to Wembley. Season's over. We're going to be in the Championship again next year. Okay, well, it's been an amazing roller coaster. Maybe it was a bit too soon. You start rationalising it in your head.
At the far end of the pitch from where I was in the rookery, it was that sense of nausea again, that sort of, oh, God, we are going to lose this, a sort of horrifying certainty that washes over you. You know it's only going to go one way, which made what happened subsequently all the more enjoyable. I did think it was over. I mean, it was a soft penalty. I don't remember how much it was, oh, God, that's it. It was sort of head in your hands stuff. I did watch it. I was watching the penalty. I don't tend to look away.
Knockout takes. Almunia saves. Knockout follows in. Almunia saves again.
Almunia saved the first time. I thought, mate, you've got to get up for the second one. He took an age, didn't he? I thought, come on, Manuel, get up. But it was almost like I expected him to save the second time.
And then it kind of went in slow motion. The penalty take, then the save, I can still see. I reckon I could reenact it. Maybe not actually do the save, but I know exactly where he was standing. I've watched it so many times. It was like slow motion.
Almunia, who we found out afterwards was injured, which was the kind of, you know, if this needed an extra twist, the even more incredible twist was that Almunia had this huge strapping on his hamstring, which meant that he couldn't get up to save the rebound from this penalty properly. And that's probably the reason he actually saved it, just because he sort of spread himself on the ground rather than jumping up on his feet. I remember him saving the initial penalty and actually not celebrating too much, because you just saw the ball pop out back to Knockaert, and I thought, well, even though he saved it, Knockaert's just going to put this in the net. And it was a very strange second effort from Knockaert, just didn't put enough power into it, managed to get it clear.
I never ever look away for a penalty, just because you never know. I also never expect a penalty to be saved. So it was a real surprise when Almunia not only saved it the first time, but in that sort of lumbering way, kind of saved it again the second time. He seemed to get up in that slow motion way, which sadly I got very used to when he was an Arsenal player. And I always loved the fact that Watford fans loved him a lot more than we did. So I was very pleased for him at that time and was still celebrating, still like kind of hugging our little crew as the ball took its turn up the right-hand side.
Everyone was bundling around and quite rightly celebrating that because it was a fine thing in its own right. And I just remember, for whatever reason, just having my eye on the game and turned my daughter, to then six-year-old daughter, to watch it as well and tried to get words out and pointed and grunted like an idiot to try and convey the immediacy of what was about to happen. It was fabulous.
The counter-attack seemed to kind of happen in slow motion. You're still celebrating, but the ball hasn't gone out of play. Normally, when you're watching these things, you get excited, then, you know, there's a bit of a flurry where you hope that the rebound doesn't go in, then the ball goes out for a corner or throw-in, and there's a massive cheer, and then you can celebrate properly then. But, of course, it kept coming, and then it kept coming, and then it kept coming.
So Mooney had played his part. Cassetti has played his part, not only giving the penalty, but getting it out of the way. And of course, it led to those names, the ones that you know so, so well. But what about those guys who did their bit to get that ball into the back of the net?
Ikechi Anya, whose subsequent decline on leaving Watford is an absolute tragedy because he was enormous fun. He'd been playing wing-back three times that week, and he never stopped running. And this is, what, the end of added time? He's been playing wing back for the entirety, and he's still got the energy to get the clearance on his chest and to run.
Touch from Ikechi Anya is still completely underappreciated. That ball forward, Hogg, Deeney, it's a blur.
The first thing I thought as Cassetti booted up into the air was, I'm going to give my dad a big man hug, as we normally do when one of these big moments happens at Vicarage Road. And I was kind of jumping up and down, going, oh, I've got my hands on my head, oh my goodness, what's happening? Next thing I know, my dad's gone to me, he goes, we've got a chance here. And he said it to me as Ikechi Anya plucked that ball out of the sky, which was an unbelievable touch. And I think one of the most underappreciated parts of that whole move, the touch over his shoulder, the height of that ball in that moment is incredible from Ikechi Anya. And I don't think it gets the recognition it deserves.
And I remember quite quickly thinking, this is a chance. This feels like a chance to score. I think partly because Brentford had conceded a similar goal at the end of the League One season a week before, where Doncaster broke away from a missed penalty at one end and scored at the other. And so that was kind of in all of our heads. And as Watford broke away, I thought, this just feels like something could be happening. It had been all season a team that liked to play on the counter-attack. It wasn't a team that would just hoof it clear and sort it out later. They took risks. They were always looking to score. They saw attacking potential from every single situation. As they broke away and Anya played it down the line to Forestieri. Brilliant touch by Ikechi Anya, by the way, which shouldn't go underrated. Played it down the line to Forestieri.
And Forestieri's cross to the back stick. You know, he was accused of being was thought of as a sort of luxury player, someone who had, you know, lots of fun tricks but didn't always deliver. But he did enough to deliver a cross on that occasion, you know, pumping it down the right wing, finding the back stick.
And then as it's gone to Forestieri, I'm thinking, no way. And I thought he was going to run it out, to be honest, because my angle, just looking at it, I thought he's overrun this here. And as he's crossed it in, I've just seen Jonathan Hogg bombing it. He went from the our 18-yard box to their 18-yard box in 6-7 seconds, which is incredible.
Jacob, you said it, Kelly said it, and Matt Rowson said it. I've certainly thought it. So I reckon we all know exactly how amazing that Ikechi Anya touch was. But how important was it? We'll see what Troy thinks about that later on. The attack continued.
The way that the camera turned round to the left for that attack, there was a Leicester defender who was slightly out of shot, and I didn't know that they had an extra man back. So it looked like Jonathan Hogg, who was making this lung-busting run into the box, was completely unmarked, even more unmarked than he ended up being. I just remember screaming at the TV in my halls in Sheffield, cross, 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 because I thought Hogg was totally unmarked. As the ball came in, it was slightly less of a chance than I actually realised it was, but I still thought he's going to go for goal here. You could see that gap at the near post. He's made this run into the box. And the knockback, you can't appreciate enough how unselfish that knockdown was from Hogg onto Deeney, who, yes, had played the whole 90 minutes, but had got up the pitch relatively slowly compared to Hogg. You know, he was jogging behind. Hogg must have seen that gap at the near post.
Jonathan Hogg in front of us. The ball comes over. You think Jonathan Hogg's going to take a shot. But I've since found out that Jonathan Hogg was the least likely person to score. So it was a good job that he does an amazing kind of knockback.
Jonathan Hogg, what on earth was he doing there, of all people? You'd be less surprised to see Almunia on the end of the cross. But Jonathan Hogg, again, a great loss when he decided to move up north, I thought, nodding it down and Troy's dumping it in. And during that counter-attack, one overlooked detail is that I was the only person in the rookery who was watching. You know, everyone was bundling around, everyone was celebrating the penalty save because, you know, the consensus was the, you know, resignation, I think, to the fact that Leicester had won the tie at the death.
And right there, in front of where myself, my then-girlfriend, the ball stops, slows down to absolutely nothing. And right in front of us, if the net hadn't been there, the ball kind of would have hit us. It felt like that.
And I remember just thinking, as it dropped down, the goal just seemed massive from my angle. It really did just seem to open up. Probably the sweetest ball Troy's ever hit, in all honesty. And obviously, it's just absolute chaos when that goal's gone in. I have to admit, when it hit the back of the net, I cannot remember anything for the next minute or so, apart from jumping with my dad, going absolutely crazy, obviously. You know when you've hugged someone so hard that you kind of like, your eyes are kind of like trying to refocus and trying to make out what's going on. And the next thing I know, I've grabbed my dad, I've looked up, and everyone's just on the pitch.
People talk about the ball and down the flank and the ball across and the cushioned header. It was the certainty with which Troy smashed that into the back of the net. Once the whole thing had been put in motion, nothing was going to stop it. And the way that ball was thumped into the back of the net, it was just almost like a full stop. Bosh, have that. There you go. One of the best moments in footballing history, right there for you, Watford fans.
Absolutely astonishing. Now here come Watford. Forestieri. Here's Hogg.
And quite right that it was Troy who had been given a second chance, took that second chance with both hands. I remember thinking, discussing Troy that season and thinking, what was the right thing to do for Watford to do? Was it right to give him a second chance, given what he'd done, given that he'd been to jail, given what he had been committed for? And I always felt it really rather depended on him. Not a judgment to be made from the outside, because you sort of think a bloke who's messed up deserves a second chance, do your time. But if he's genuinely remorseful, if he genuinely realises he's screwed up, then of course you give him a second chance. And boy, did he capitalise on that. Because from the point he came back into the side, he looked like the leader that he would grow into. And he was absolutely pivotal in that team.
Vicarage Road turned to absolute mayhem. People were hugging. People were singing. People were cheering. People were, well, injuring themselves, weren't they, Mike?
I celebrated, like everyone else in Vicarage Road that afternoon, I celebrated with such force that I thought I was having a heart attack. My brother sat next to me, thought I was having a heart attack. I went ghostly white. I had the sweats. I was in a great deal of pain. I couldn't really move very well. So I had to go to St John's Ambulance instead of getting on the pitch with everyone else. Andy, my brother, helped me down to St John's Ambulance where they checked me out. And ultimately arrived at the conclusion that I pulled a muscle. I'd celebrated with such ferocity. I'd pulled some sort of muscle in my chest, but it was incredibly painful.
Minutes after the goal, I actually, like everyone, we all ran on the pitch, didn't we? We all tried to get on. As I went to jump on, I had this realisation of, I work for another football club in the EFL, I can't jump on. So I didn't. I kind of like hoisted myself up. I sit in the lower Graham Taylor and then got back down. But then at full time, when everyone on the pitch, I was like, this is a once in a lifetime moment. I've still got a photo of, I was wearing these little ballet shoes when I ran on the pitch, and just took a photo of my feet on the pitch. The Vicarage Road pitch still to me is a holy place. It's my home. And to be there on that day just felt so special. To be on that pitch where history was literally made was incredible.
It was one of the craziest, incredible, emotional, you know, it makes those trips to the Vic on those cold Tuesday nights all the worthwhile, when you think, I was there when Deeney scored.
It was insane. I'm getting goosebumps just talking to you about it now. Watching Deeney run off, the absolute bedlam all around. As a football fan, you want these moments. You want them for your own team, of course you do. I was too young for Anfield 89. I was 14, watched it on telly. I remember always thinking of the Jimmy Glass moment for Carlisle when the keeper kept him up. Much as though I loathe United and Sheringham, you've got to look at a moment like that and think, I wish that had happened to us. So to be at the ground, in front of the goal, for something that had begun to mean quite a lot to me through friends that I got and still have at the club, it was really special. The couple of things I also remember was the pitch invasion. As I say, as an Arsenal fan, and Paddy as a Tottenham fan, I remember us making we decided that we weren't going to go on the pitch because it wasn't our pitch to go on, if you see what I mean. It wasn't our thing to celebrate. We were really, really lucky to have been there, but it wasn't ours to make a big deal of. When all swarmed around us, we stayed in the stands and just really marvelled at it, really.
A member of staff in the Halls bar I was in, having to sort of jump out the way as I went, you know, as I wheeled away and started sprinting across the room. You know, I nearly knocked a tray out of her hand or something like that. A totally mad moment, something which I think we will always cherish as Watford fans, as our special moment. Because you see other dramatic goals and other dramatic things happening to other clubs, and it felt like for the few years before that, Watford hadn't really had one of those moments.
Mike was on his way to St John's Ambulance to get some treatment. But hang on, what happened to Stuart? We left him crying on the concourse. What happened next, Stu?
We hear a deafening cheer above our heads, and we look up at the TV and you see Johnny from Sky doing his nut with cheering Watford fans, yellow blobs behind him. So we immediately realise what's happened, charge down the next left turn, straight into the toilets. So we turn around, bundle our way back out of the toilets, like the Chuckle Brothers in a particularly tight spot with a pane of glass, and eventually sort of like take the next turn left, which is the correct one, back up the steps, and we emerge back into the rookery on the other side of the stand, just to see the ball arc across from left to right towards Jonathan Hogg at the back post. So the ball hits the net, and then I was like Semtex. I was in a compact space and I just needed to explode, just to run. So I legged it down the steps, vaulted the hoardings and started running. As for what happened next, I've seen this back several times. If you watch the coverage, the director eventually cuts to Zola, who's just been picked off the floor and looks like he's been rescued from a blown up building. And then the director cuts wide to show the pitch. I can see myself. I've made it as far as the edge of the area when some buffoon running on from the main stand falls over, takes my legs from underneath me, and I'm sent face first into the turf. And I get up and I just sort of staggered around, really, trying to hug people on the pitch. I don't know about the rest of my mates. My friend Hong Kong Stewie was up in the executive boxes, and at that precise moment he was, as he later described it, essentially dry-humping Tony Coton. We all just met up in the pub about an hour later and just swapped stories.
Now, many fans couldn't get to the game. Logistics is one thing. Location is another. But Steve had something else that he had to look after while he was at home watching the game.
My wife had arranged a builder to come round to give us a quote. We were going to have some work done on our house. And she had arranged that for more or less the time the match would finish, if it didn't even go to extra time. I said to her, maybe we should do it. Yeah, you can come round a bit later. I'm not going to, you know, if the match is going on, I'm just going to be watching. You know, I'm not going to be able to spend time and contribute to the discussion with him around what work we want doing and stuff. She's like, well, I can't change the time now. He's coming round at that time. Transpired that the builder arrives when the match is still going on. That, you know, there's that Joel Hegstrand head injury that meant the injury time was prolonged. But this time I'm watching the TV with the builder there talking to my wife. Knockout dives. I'm up in the room. I'm effing and blinding. And the builder's looking at me going, what's going on with this guy? What's going on? And my wife's like, what's happened? What happened? And you can't explain it in that moment. And then, well, everyone knows what happens. You know, Amunia saves, go up the other end, score. I'm jumping around like a lunatic in completely the opposite emotion. And my wife's going, well, what's happened now? This builder's looking at me like I'm an absolute madman running around the room.
So our Jason is normally sat behind me in the rookery end, but he didn't make it to this game. He was off with a bunch of university friends on a pre-arranged weekend away. Watford were never going to make it to the playoffs when he booked the holiday. and they were on the way back from North Wales.
I was actually on driving duties, was having to take a couple of my mates back home, sort of West London way, before heading back to Watford. Now, if I remember rightly, we had Radio 5 on in the car, and I think they had the F1 on, so we were only getting goal updates. We'd made it back into England, and I was now on roads that actually I know quite well. So I knew where I was going until it went back to the ground because there was a penalty in injury time. And obviously hearing it had gone to Leicester at that point, I thought, well, that's it then, isn't it? We're done. Playoffs over for us. We'll have to try again next year. Very despondent in the car. My mates, they obviously took great humour in my despondency as to what was about to happen. I think it was Pat Murphy on Five Live. They stayed with it for the penalty. Obviously the save again, ball's cleared. And whilst we're breaking, Pat's telling the host that, well, that's it. We're off to extra time. And I think his words went something along the lines of, back to the F1. Oh, there's been a goal. No, I'm like, well, OK, which is what? Hey, what? Where? And I just assumed the ball was still up the up our end and we'd conceded. But no, he then said, Deeney scored the goal. I think I went a bit nuts in the car, as nuts as I could, while still driving and maintaining composure. Trouble is, we were approaching a roundabout. And those roads that were familiar, all of a sudden I didn't have a clue what I was doing, where I was meant to be going. So I had to ask my mate in the passenger seat which junction I should be taking off the roundabout. Thankfully, he was paying attention. Not long after the game had finished, I got a phone call from my other half, and my sister was there as well. They were obviously very excited as to what was happening. There's just lots of shouting and screaming going on. I'm not sure we actually had any conversation.
So we've got to speak to Troy many times or from the rookery end. And in 2015, on our fifth birthday, we did get to speak to Troy and took him out to dinner at the Grove. How posh of us. Of course, the evening went on and we had to discuss that certain goal and what he remembered about it.
Not much initially, watching it back a million times that I have done, you start to see a little bit more. The clearest thing I remember was thinking you dive a little so-and-so for the first spot. And then I'm sure I was talking to, I think it was Richard Delatt. I'm just like, there's never a foul. And he's like, he agreed with me. He was like, said, it's going to ruin a good game, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, 15, 16 seconds later, I'm in the crowd with my family with no top on. So it's a bit crazy. That's quality. It's good to look back on.
There were so many people involved with that goal. But who was the most important? And who was it for Troy?
Kechianya. Because if he has a touch, it goes elsewhere.
OK. I think it's Jonathan Hogg.
Yeah, but you have to remember, he did come in like 80 minutes into the game. So I'd expect that he could... And Hoggy's a running machine as well, so I'd expect that he's running past people. Now, that whole move breaks down on Ketchy's touch. Remember, he's cleared it high. He's running to the ball with a man behind him and he just kills it dead. Next touch, and the third touch, he sets Fernando away. That's his quality. And so remember, what was it, 96th minute or something like that?
Yeah.
Ketchy played the full game as well, and it was high intensity. And also, he was 1v1 with Jeffrey Slupp, who's obviously doing well at the moment in their league. So if Ketchy's touch is bad, the whole move goes. And
I also like the fact Vidra got out of the way.
Probably the monster truck was coming, so he got out of the way when the monster truck was coming. But I've called firmly, and he got out of the way. And I actually don't, again, without watching it back, I actually thought I had loads of area to hit, but I actually don't. Didn't know there was two on the line. I just remember Kasper Schmeichel kind of diving past the ball, and I was already like, right, top's coming off, let's go.
Yeah.
And you put some serious hurt on it. Were you just thinking about getting it on target, or was that the whole... Did you feel the emotion, did you feel the moment in that split second?
It's probably the only time I knew I was going to score. Probably the best way to say it. I knew I was going to score. So I didn't think, oh, keep it down. It's just a repetition of being with Gianfranco Zola, obviously, hours after training, doing these kind of finishes and all sorts of angles. I just knew I was going to score. And there was no pressure, because if I missed extra time, well, like if I missed this, the game's over. It's like a free shot, really. So I knew I was going to score. And then I was just thinking in my head, right, family's over there. Score. Then I remember Hoggy was coming. And I thought, can't outrun Hoggy. So I had to like kind of push him a little bit to get out of the way.
No one wants to be defined by one single moment, certainly not at this early stage of your career. But do you think you'll ever get bored of being people talking about it, of watching it?
No. And you say defining moments. That's like saying, would Aguero not want that last-minute goal for Man City? You want a moment. Things on the TV now, top 100 goals and stuff like that. Mine could be in the top 100 of all time, and I'm buzzing with that. Obviously, I don't think my career is going to be defined off one game. Thankfully, I've got to score a few more goals since, but you definitely want a moment. If you can't have a moment, you want trophies. without jinxing it, I think I'm on course to have both, so I'm doing all right.
How quickly after the game did you watch it back?
I went to the casino afterwards with my mates, so we didn't watch it back. We watched it back, didn't watch it the day after because I was doing the Sky interviews and I was actually at the Belfry because I went to play golf. So I probably watched it back the third day after Brighton and Crystal Palace. So yeah, that's probably the truth of it. Obviously, when Sky phoned and asking, "What did you watch it?" You have to do the politically correct. Yeah, of course I did. I was watching all of it, but that's probably like the third day. In hindsight, I would have took the whole moment in more. I probably would have went out with some of the lads. Obviously, there's footage of like Christian and Fernando in the Tower Centre and all that. I probably would have made sure that everyone went out afterwards. But I was just adamant that we was going to win. Then that I was all right. Go home, have a little quiet one with the lads. Went to the casino. Went to play golf the next day, and you know. In hindsight, we lost and the whole moment's gone, but now I would have probably, you know, went out and had a good time in Watford. Probably end up in Oceania or in the Fountain, one of the two.
The celebrations did go on and on for a few hours afterwards in the town centre. But what did it mean, this goal? Where does it sit with Watford fans? What does it mean to them? What does it mean to the club and going forward?
This moment felt like it really kick-started a new era of Watford where we were maybe competing at a slightly higher table than we had done over the last few years, and also kick-started an incredibly dramatic period for the club over the last decade or so.
What it means now, what it tells you now, is the importance of the journey, doesn't it? Because the fact that we lost to Crystal Palace doesn't make that goal any less remarkable. It's an afterthought, it's a detail. So what? Leicester's star rose much quicker and to a much greater height than ours did in subsequent years, but it isn't really about Leicester. I quite like Leicester, really. I mean, as much as you ever like teams other than Watford, Leicester always seem to be about supporting Leicester rather than being down on you or sneering at you. I don't enjoy rubbing it in. I live fairly close to Leicester and I've got lots of Leicester fans around. It's not something that gets raised in a sort of finger-pointing way. I think everyone can appreciate the goal for what it was, given what happened afterwards. But it's almost something to put next to the title. It's not remotely the same as winning the title. But in our history, it is. It's a remarkable thing. It's an exciting thing. It's the sort of thing you go to football for, if you're a Watford supporter, I suppose. But I can't believe that a Manchester City fan or a Liverpool fan would have enjoyed that any less, or that it would be significantly outstripped by winning another title or another cup. And that would be great. I can't imagine what that would be like, but it wouldn't be as exciting or dramatic in the moment as that goal was. Even 10 years on, watching it, it makes the hairs rise on the back of your neck, and long may it continue to do so.
And you forget what an incredible moment that was. I mean, my kids sadly were too young to have been there. Because of lax parenting, they watch a lot of YouTube unattended, and one day I came in and they're watching this video, like the 10 most incredible moments in sports, and it's all like home runs from the Arkansas pig knuckles and some basketball rubbish. But the number one clip was Deeney Day, complete with text captions sort of largely incorrectly explaining what the context was to the American audience.
Surely the clip that all of us have watched on YouTube 10 times more than any other over the last decade. And I think the fact that obviously this podcast being produced to remember this moment 10 years on sums up its impact on Watford and also on football culture. I mean, whenever I tell people I meet now that I support Watford, it's the first thing they bring up. It's the one moment which we have which really relates to every single neutral football fan who you meet in this country, and I'm sure globally as well. That's how viral it's gone over the last few years.
And it is recognised internationally. DCW found that out.
So I was in Germany recently and I was at an 1860 Munich match. And as you do at these things, got talking to some of the locals and was chatting to a guy after the game, and a few of the guys in our group were telling him who we all supported. He was asking, he was curious about who our teams were. We had a few Arsenal fans, few Spurs fans, a Man United, and then someone said, "Oh, and he's Watford," and pointed at me. And then the guy turned, looked at me, put his hand on my shoulder, paused and said, "Watford." Then he took a step back and then mimed just kicking through the ball. And then looked at me again and said, "Right foot, yeah? The most incredible goal of all time." So even in Germany, at an 1860 Munich match, when you've got fans of all the Premier League clubs and everything, he was most interested in the fact that I was a Watford fan because he knew about that Deeney goal.
As you look back now, 10 years on, how do you feel about that goal? What do you remember about it? I think for many of us, of course, it will probably remember somebody who we now might miss in our lives, or it might have been a very special moment for you at that time in 2013. And it was just full of different emotions. Ollie, what were all those emotions we were feeling during that Deeney goal?
There was relief when Almunia saves and saves again. Joy when Cassetti hoofs it upfield and everybody cheers. Sudden anticipation when Anya brings the ball down, because I've seen we could score here. Tension as I grab my son's sleeve and tell him this is our chance to win it. A sort of manic desire as I scream at Watford to keep going forwards. Disappointment when I see it's Jonathan Hogg in scoring position at the far post. Confusion as Hogg heads it away from goal. And then, well, I can't say I really remember exactly what I felt. My mind left me, it just went. No idea where. And when it returned, I realised I was dry-humping my 13-year-old son and people were on the pitch. What does it mean to me now? Well, I've been watching Watford for 55 years and this was just 20 seconds. But it was the most intense, emotionally chaotic and cathartic 20 seconds of my whole life. Nothing else compares.
What it brings home is really what football is all about for us as supporters. Because if Troy doesn't like the goal because they didn't go on to win the playoffs, that doesn't necessarily matter to us as supporters. Because we will always have that moment. And I dare say that supporters of most clubs will look at that moment and think, God, what must that have been like to be a Watford fan in the ground? Or what must that have been like to be a Watford fan following on the radio or watching on TV? That is what being a football supporter is. It's not what it's about. It's actually all we can dream of. And can you even dream of it? Do you have a right to dream of something like that unfolding before your eyes? I think we are so blessed to have had that moment, because it is the very essence of what you want your football supporting experience to be. From despair to elation in, 15, 20 seconds.
10 years on, looking back, that goal means more to me now, because at the time we knew it was incredible, we knew it was special, but we lived through a moment of history that will be talked about forever. Troy Deeney will be talked about forever. That commentary is iconic. We were in the stadium for one of the most incredible moments. And when things are tougher with Watford, like they are at the moment, I have to remember back to these moments and realise we've had tough moments, but my goodness, we've had some good ones as well. And our football club is still special, and moments like that can remind us of just how special it is and how lucky we are to be associated so deeply with a football club that produces moments like that. Let's just hope there's a few more around the corner.
And even 10 years on now, looking back and just reliving that moment again, you know, I think it probably is the most iconic moment of this football club, without a doubt. It's one of the most iconic goals in football. It's one of the most iconic moments in the sport. And I think what that moment means to me is it's worth going through the low times for the high times, because that was worth it. All those days away, home, in the cold, in the wet, watching some very good Watford teams and watch some bad Watford teams, it makes it all worthwhile spending that moment with the people you care about in the place that you love. That's what I look back on when I think of that moment. And to spend that moment with fans next to you, but with my dad, with something that I'll never forget.
Moments are incredibly important to clubs like us. We're never going to win a trophy, not now anyway. So for clubs like us, it's all about moments. And this was the best. I'm just really grateful it happened on my watch, because there's 100 years of fans before me and 100 years of fans coming after me who will never see anything like that.
The goal has gone down in history. Watford history and footballing history, along with the one and only Mr. Troy Deeney. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to everyone who contributed, to Jacob, to Kelly, to Steve, to Tayo, to Stu Hutchinson, Adam Drury, Ollie Wicken and Matt Rowson. Of course, the other FTRE boys, Jason, Mike and DCW. It's a great day to remember, and we hope that this podcast has jogged a few memories that a YouTube clip might not have done. Thank you for listening to this very special From the Rookery End. Come on, you horns.